Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Last week, my colleagues at the Jewish Board of Deputies, together with soldiers and the Union of Jewish Women, were in the CBD at the Maharishi Invincibility Institute to contribute our 67 minutes to honor Nelson Mandela. What we saw there, however, and the scale at which the Institute operates blew us away. I'm delighted to have Ariel Abramson, Head of Special Projects and Academy Formation at the Institute, to tell me more. Ariel, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, and hello to all the listeners.
I can't believe it was a week ago that we were actually in town, all of us with our mouths open, marveling at the Institute.
Yeah. I was thinking that this morning as well. I was like, I can't believe it's been a week.
Tell me a little bit about how the Institute came about.
So it's actually a beautiful story that starts with our CEO, Dr. Taddy Bletcher. So by profession, he is an actuary, and he was leaving to go overseas to launch his career at about 27 or 28. And a week before he was leaving, he basically had this meltdown and was like, I cannot leave this country. I can't leave the youth of the city, and I have to find a solution. So he decided to start the first free university inside of South Africa. And over the decades, it has scaled from a preschool all the way up to a PhD. And now it's developed into a whole education hub. So that's where it started, with a vision.
Okay, so there's a couple of things that struck me about it. And the first one is sustainability, because so many organizations go out there with the aim of doing good, but it's so hard to keep that program going. How does this sustain itself?
So I think there's two legs to it. The first is naturally having an actuary as a leader of an organization. He's got the mind of what financial sustainability looks like. So that's the first leg. The second leg is around staying relevant with education and expanding with education. But that also exists under the umbrella of sustainability internationally and the role of corporates and the role of private sector in getting involved in that vision. So within that, it's not just one entity that's keeping it sustainable. It's a collection of individuals driven by incredible leadership to enable that.
Well, you talk about those two aspects, but there's also that vision. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to look at a property, and we'll come to the property in a second, but to be able to look at a property like that and envisage what it can become. How many years has the Institute been going for?
So it's been going for 30 years. Initially, it was called Cedar City Campus, and then Taddy and another co-founder decided to re-envision to Maharishi Institute. And then 2 years ago, Taddy had this vision for Education Town. He just saw the properties, he just saw the space, places that were drug dens, places that have been run by gangs, and he was like, we are doing this, we are re-envisioning, we are reimagining, and he went after it, and that's how it's been going.
So let's just describe it. Firstly, I have to say that I was one of the group that got lost last Friday. So when everybody else was going to the front by the courthouse, I was wandering up the building, okay? And I saw there was a plaque to a shul.
Yes.
So let's start with that. I mean, I was quite surprised to see it there.
Beautiful, right?
So beautiful.
So just for context for the listeners is there are five buildings inside of the CBD which now belong to the Maharishi Institute, and it is forming an ecosystem called Education Town. And two or three years ago, Anglo-America decided to leave the inner city. So they put their building up for auction, and a whole bunch of corporates were competing for it. And ultimately, through a selection process, Taddy got to the front of the line and he got the building donated for R2.50.
Once off. Right.
He paid it. He got the email and
he paid it upfront.
He paid it upfront in cash from his own bank account. Like, he did the whole thing. And before it was the Anglo-American building, it was actually a shul. And then they developed it. And it was actually a very beautiful story how it's come full circle back into the hands of the Jewish community and Jewish leadership.
Yeah, it was incredible. And it obviously, clearly a very old, but very beautiful building. Okay, so the one building is the Anglo building. Right. What are the other buildings?
So there's another building which was first donated by Anglo back in the day. So there's two Anglo buildings, and then there's another building which has been bought by and donated by David and Tracy Frankel called the Next Up Institute of Technology. And this is the forefront of AI and robotics. It's re-envisioning that space and bringing this international landscape into South Africa and into Africa, because nothing like this model exists. And then we have a preschool. And then we also have other specks of land that belong to us. So it's the sports field, and which is in partnership with Standard Bank. And then we have our clubhouse, which was donated by a partner who just saw Maharishi and was like, I want to give the money. And he just donated the money. And then we put together a whole system in place to make sure that it's sustainable.
So when I was getting lost, which I do quite often, I found myself actually, I think, in a kitchen.
Yes. How magical is that kitchen?
And firstly, how incredibly welcoming everybody was, considering that they had no idea who I was. They did invite me to come inside. And it was very welcoming. And one feels very safe. But that hub is not just classrooms. There's a kitchen. And there's a lot of support. We sat outside afterwards in what seemed like a balcony area, indoor, outdoor area?
Yeah.
So what are all the different components to the institute?
So just to give a bit of a visual image to our listeners, is that it's almost like a private sector innovation at an education level for the public sector. So, you know, we have different academies that exist, and our academies specialize for our students. So At our university, students get a business administrative degree, and then they have the opportunity to specialize in different academies. And it's a demand-driven education model. So within each academy, we basically curate a system for them. So a tangible example, which you noted around safety, is we've now partnered with CAP Security, and we have curated a model for tactical officers across 3 years, which does not exist in Africa. And there's a whole training center there for them. So for example, there's a jiu-jitsu training center. Mm-hmm. We now have the back end to the control room. So it's a very practical hands-on experience and exposure. So when you say what's available inside of the institution, it's all curated experiences around education. So another example is in our high school, we have this magical space called a tinkering lab. But it's for these students to go and explore around robotics and AI, and really getting their hands into the physical experience of how to start conceptualizing worlds and work beyond just sitting in a classroom and developing, you know, those cognitive skills.
It is incredible. So it starts off at what age? What's the smallest you can join?
So the preschool, which is your 3 to 5 year olds.
Okay. And Let's start, and we'll work our way up. The 3 to 5 year olds, are they from the inner city?
So they are from anywhere. So where that started was, you know, naturally our demographic is students who are isolated from general economic and social opportunities. So their level of education, like on a psychological level, isn't as developed. So there was a lot of challenges around teenage pregnancy. So we decided to start this preschool to address that need. So it's for students, it's for staff, it's for people in the inner city. It expands.
I like what you said about it being a private initiative for the public sector. And I think it is, I think that's what's lacking. You know, so many people talk about public-private partnerships, but you're not really sure what the partnership is all about. Whereas here you can see it. How do you become accepted into the higher education system?
Can you just elaborate on what you're referring to there?
Oh, no. If you want to study at the institute, how do you go about doing it?
So at our high school, we have an email address, and you just send an email, and they say, this is our open day, and they come and they do a screening, and that's simple. And then at the university level, people can come on our open days, and they just get an induction as to what the institute's about, and they apply, and they usually get accepted. It is a non-fee paying education system. So
what are the criteria, and how do you mentor? Because I imagine a lot of mentoring is needed.
So that's actually a beautiful question, and that speaks to the philosophy of the organization, which is something called consciousness-based education. And the whole focus of the organization is putting the individual first. So what those two legs mean is that for the first year, it's a bridging year. It's a space of exploration, it's a space of healing, it's a space of really realigning with oneself and one's identity before then stepping into a whole business degree, so that by the time they get to the academies, which is specialist partnerships, they have a stronger sense of themselves and they've worked through different paths. So you asked about the criteria. So the criteria for inclusion, they just have to have a matric.
Okay.
Literally, it's that simple. No marks, just that paper. And then families also have to be earning within a particular demographic. So those are the two requirements.
Is it a lower demographic?
Yeah.
It's almost like earning but barely.
Yes, yeah, so the working poor.
Like domestic workers,
exactly.
Security guards.
Exactly. So it's usually between 4,000 to 10,000 rand a month, and it's considered below the poverty line in South Africa.
And then how do you accommodate the need? Because I imagine the need is great. I mean, I can think of 20 people I could refer to you right here and now.
As in the need of the volume of people?
Yes.
So there's usually two or three intakes in a year, and as we're expanding, those systems are going to have to change. And with our new head of academy formation, she's going to look into what that process looks like. So it's very much accommodating the needs that we have at the time. And usually we can have 500 to 600 applications and students showing up.
I can't believe our time is actually like almost out, and I haven't even got to a quarter of the questions I wanted to get to. But the one I definitely want to get to is, you spoke about partnerships, not only... What was for me so incredible is how many different organizations want to be part of it and are contributing in different ways. Yeah. And just off the top of my head, Josie, my Josie.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to partnerships, it's based off of the human connection and what resonates with you. So referring to Josie, my Josie, their mandate as a stakeholder in the inner city is to really help clean it up. So Maharishi's bringing in education and shifting that landscape. Josie My Josie's coming in and saying, how can we reinvent and reprocess dynamics in the inner city? So for example, the taxi industry. How do we make it safer so that people want to come in? How do we rehome those who are homeless and take those who are struggling with substances and get them into the right facilities so that it becomes a safer haven for students who want to get education?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about any of the other partners? Because I just remember at the function last week, how many partners there were.
Yeah, so we have an array of partners. So public partners include Ultron, and they donated the tinkering lab, and they donated robotics. As I said, David and Tracy Frankel, who donated the building, Absa Cybersecurity, you know, we partner with them. So Bright Insurance, so it's very expansive in terms of the relationships.
And the other thing I specifically wanted to ask you is about the concept of paying it forward, which was so clear in our little time there, and how important it is and how ingrained it is. Mm. Can you talk me through that?
Sure. So part of the model is that, you know, it is a non-fee paying institution, and ultimately part of the model is that students get stipends every month. And it's really important that individuals learn the importance of agency and really embody Ubuntu. So every single month, students have to take a certain amount, no more than 200 rand, and they pay it forward towards another student's education.
Wow.
So that's what the pay it forward model is.
It's really, really is incredible. And it sounds extremely complicated.
Yeah.
It sounds like there are a lot of moving parts, and yet it seems to work so seamlessly.
It does. You know, when you're in, you also need to remember that we're in the social development sector, and it requires a very specific type of personality and mentality. And you have to be able to balance different responsibilities, different expectations, different developments, all at one in one go. So it's one of those things where it's also rooted in the leadership. Like our director of academics is, you know, she's such an incredible woman and leader, as is the head of formations of academies. So all these bodies are all functioning in sync, which is making the organization function in sync too.
And in terms of social work, I know one of the things you do, which I love, is I don't know if it's yoga or just deep breathing, or tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So when you're dealing with individuals who come from a poverty-stricken background based off of definition, there's been a lot of trauma. And as a result, is the nervous system is often dysregulated. And cognitively, individuals go into that state of fight and flight, and their cognitive bandwidth also restricts from decision-making. So a tool to help the students and staff really recenter and realign is that every single day, twice a day, students do some yoga, they do breath work, they do a little bit of meditation just to realign and just give them that space to recenter. But it also links into something else that we do is we have a leadership academy. And with our leadership academy and courses, the Oppenheimers donated a nature reserve. And every few months, the students go there for 2 weeks and they do a whole bunch of introspection and reflection. Phones are moved, they go on hikes. So that is that holistic development of the individual.
And just going back to paying it forward and looking at the holistic individual, what successes have you seen, and in what way are past students paying it forward? Not only in that 200, but...
So I think the successes of paying it forward come in the sense of agency, in that the students feel competent to start leading themselves, leading their communities. So although it's not always financial, it becomes a spiritual and emotional process that inspires other people. And then in terms of the alumni, you know, they come back to the Institute and they try to give lectures, and they also promote about the organization through word of mouth. So, you know, you also become a representation of the process that you've gone through. So it's not always, again, it's tangible, but it's always there, you know, subconsciously.
Your enthusiasm is also really, really contagious. And I'm so excited to have you here. And I wish people could go and see it, and perhaps they can. And in conclusion, then, maybe if anybody would like to get involved, if they'd like to see it or suggest people, I know I will, what should they do?
So there's two things. We have monthly breakfasts, and we would love everybody to come and attend. But I'm happy to give out my personal details, and then I can refer people to the right networks and invite them to the breakfast coming up.
It sounds absolutely amazing. Please do.
Thank you. So my cell phone number is 072-767-2015.
Perfect. And if anybody missed that, you're welcome to obviously contact me. Everybody's got my contact details. That was Ariel Abramson. And she is, and I do not want to get this wrong, she is the head of special projects and academy formation at the Maharishi Invincibility Institute.